Welcome to session 114 of the Bible in a Year commentary. If you started this series on the 1st of January, then today should be the 24th of April. Today we'll be looking at Isaiah 23 to 27 and Psalm 114. So far in Isaiah, we've read through the section focused on the judgment and future hope of Jerusalem, and have started on the section focused on the judgment and future hope of the nations. Through these different preaches and visions, we've gathered a series of images. We saw Isaiah in God's courtroom, purified to be in God's presence, and then commissioned to be a warning to the people that they will ultimately ignore. God was about to pour judgment on the Israelites for their wickedness and corruption. This punishment was described like God laying an axe to a tree and just a stump remaining. It was destruction intended to purge and purify. Out of the remnant of his people, this tree stump, God would raise up a branch from the line of David, who would be king who reigned over the earth and brought peace. Isaiah mentioned a future son who would be born and who would come after the period of judgment. He would be a king over God's people, bring peace to the world, and restore all nations under his rule. Focusing on the foreign nations, we got mention of a day of the Lord. On this day, God will bring judgment, waging war on evil and wickedness. He will destroy powers that set themselves up against him, whether they be human kings or spiritual beings. These foreign nations are judged for their pride, oppression, and wickedness. Isaiah specifically mentions Babylon, Assyria, Philistia, Moab, Cush, also known as Ethiopia, and Egypt. But through these preaches, Isaiah highlights two key ideas. First, that the Israelites are not to turn to these foreign nations for support and protection. And secondly, that eventually even these foreign nations will be brought into God's future kingdom. So let's jump in with today's reading, Isaiah 23 to 27. Today we get the last of the 10 prophecies against the foreign nations. This time it is against the island city of Tyre. Tyre was a profitable trade city with two different ports on its little island. Just as God will bring low the great military and political powers of Assyria and Babylon, he will also bring down the economic powers. Once again, the prophecy calls people to wail and mourn on behalf of Tyre, because God will destroy them. For 70 years they will be desolate, but after 70 years, God will restore them. It says they'll go back to prostituting themselves. This seems negative to us, but it's not meant to be. It's just meant that they will go back to trading with the other nations and being prosperous in trade and finance. But the difference this time is that rather than hoarding their wealth for themselves, they'll bring it to the temple and offer it before God. Finishing his last prophecy on the judgment and future hope of foreign nations, Isaiah now spends some time summarising the fundamental points of all of this. Trust in God, because he has authority over everything. He starts by reminding the people that God will bring judgment to the whole earth. The different things he lists are things that the people could already see around them. At this time, Assyria was going around conquering different nations. So Isaiah was drawing on the imagery of the conquered nations and saying that more of this will happen across the world. But more importantly, he's saying that God is behind this. So when they see these things, it's not that God has abandoned them. It's just that this is part of God's plan, and he's still in control. Isaiah 24 ends with another "on that day." So now we're looking far into the future. On that day, God will not only bring low the nations, but he will also punish the spiritual beings in heaven and the kings on earth. In punishing the powers in heaven and the powers on earth, God is asserting his authority and his rule over the earth. Isaiah turns from the judgment of the earth to praising God, because after the judgment is finished, he will provide great feasts for all people. He will swallow up death and wipe away every tear. The people celebrate because they chose well in waiting for God to rescue them and not turning away from God. They then sing a song for him. They praise God for his strength and his salvation. God gives his people perfect peace. Those singing the song encourage others to put their trust in God. The song then switches to mourning, which may seem weird after singing about trusting God. But the point is that people are taking this time to grieve the waiting, because they know that God will eventually rescue them. We go through difficult times, and it's important that we recognise that and let ourselves feel those emotions and grieve the difficulties. But ultimately, the grief should point us to our future hope and trust that God will rescue us. So the people sing of how they yearn for God and desire to feel him close, and then declare their confidence that he will come and rescue them. They then liken it to being pregnant. They're in pains and hurting now, but also with a focus and a hope for the future, for what God will birth out of this situation. Isaiah ends this section with a description of the future hope that God will redeem his people and the nation of Israel. He uses vineyard imagery that draws back on the parable of the vineyard back in Isaiah 5. The earlier vineyard God destroyed because it wasn't being fruitful. The new vineyard, God is committed to caring for it and protecting it. The earlier vineyard produced sour, wild grapes. The new vineyard will fill the whole world with fruit. That's Isaiah 27 verse 6. God allowed the destruction of the nations so that in the process all the altars to foreign gods would be destroyed too. Because once all the things that cause people to sin are destroyed, then they can once again have a relationship with God. The chapter ends with a reminder that all this will happen in that day, far off in the future. But when God does restore his people and his city, they will fulfill their purpose, promised to Abraham to be a blessing to all the world. Even the people from Assyria and Egypt will come to Jerusalem to worship God. But that's Isaiah 23 to 27. Now let's look at Psalm 114. This psalm isn't attributed to anyone in particular and falls into the category of praise psalm. The psalm was likely a short song accompanied by music, the song of the wonder of God tied to the Exodus. Here's a summary of the structure, but I would recommend checking out the written version of this commentary in the description to see the structure properly for yourself. We start with verses 1 to 2, Israel went out from Egypt. Verses 3 to 4, nature is moved by God and his people. Verses 5 to 6, asking nature why it moved. And then verses 7 to 8, creation trembles at the Lord's presence. The psalmist opens with setting the scene. Israel has left Egypt. They've been brought out by God and they now belong to him. They were the place that his presence was meant to dwell. As the Israelites left Egypt and moved out, the psalmist described the seas as looking at them and fleeing. Here the psalmist is personifying the Red Sea as it split in two to allow the Israelites to travel through. They then mentioned mountains skipping like rams. This is likely an allusion to how it was on top of mountains that God often met with his people, and so even the mountains were subject to them. This is intensely figurative language to awaken the imagination of the singers and listeners in worship. We aren't meant to read this as though the Israelites believed the seas actually fled and the mountains actually skipped around. The psalmist then asks the question, why? Why would the sea flee and the mountains skip at the sight of the Israelites? Because of the presence of the Lord. The presence of the Lord was with his people, and all creation trembles before him. He can turn the very rocks into water. This psalm serves to awaken the wonder and majesty of God in the act of bringing them out of Egypt. It wasn't just that they moved from one land to another. There was a divine, miraculous power at work in their exodus.